matter. The denial required to move forward in the realm of spirit. This recording will begin with the introductory three quotes by Mary Baker Eddy that are at the beginning of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, the textbook of Christian Science. 1. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Those are the words of Jesus quoted by John in the Gospel of John. Chapter 8. By Shakespeare, there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And by Mary Baker Eddy, oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. So, we got to be looking for the truth if we want to be free from everything that is not the truth. And our thinking is what's going to control our experience, so we can either make it good or we can make it bad. If we've got something bad, we can always turn it into a lemonade by putting in the right kind of thinking for contemplation. And the last one is for cleaning up anything in our life, in our daily thought, speech, and action, which is not following the truth about who God is, who man is, and the relationship between them. Then God has already established his laws, and we will be abiding by them, and therefore we will benefit from them. We will be glorifying God. Since the topic is matter, I will read the Diapason of Heaven on its opposite, which is spirit. And this is by Mary Baker Eddy. Diapason of Heaven, spirit. We must declare often that spirit is not an invisible personality inhabiting a material body. Spirit has no other meaning than God and substance. We must declare there is only one Spirit, and that is God. Spirit is my God, and my God is Spirit. Individual, incorporeal, immaterial. Spirit is enthroned in my consciousness. Matter and personal sense are not enthroned. We must declare these statements for ourselves in our work. This is the short treatment that Frederick L. Rawson gives us on matter. And he says that it is very important to cover the denial of matter and the affirmation of spirit in every treatment, because that is basically the root source of every problem. The belief that there is life, truth, and intelligence in matter, instead of everything being in mind, and every substance being spirit. And also, mortal mind is an oxymoron, as Mary Baker Eddy states, because mind is divine, it is not mortal. So even saying the words mortal mind is saying a word that is contradictions, or a phrase that is a contradiction within itself. So we must deny that mortal mind can have any influence over us, and that we have only one mind, and that is the mind of God, which is divine mind, which is harmonious, and it is the opposite of mortal mind. Mortal mind being a so-called mind, but really is a nothing mind. It is nothingness. It is a false belief that it exists. Here is the short treatment by Frederick L. Rawson on matter. It's from page 161 from Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, which is on the website. matter. There is no matter. All is spirit and the manifestation of spirit, the principle of all purity and holiness. Therefore, no material ideas, all ideas are spiritual, always in the right place, ministering to man and benefiting man. So we must claim that we are spiritual. Everything about us is spiritual because we're a reflection of God, and God is spirit, and spirit is the one and only substance of all existence. Therefore, God's manifestation can't be any different than the substance of God himself. And that includes all female, male, and generic qualities. By male, I mean qualities such as strength and courage and life, and qualities of female such as mothering, nurturing, bringing to fulfillment. And by neuter, I mean something that could be used like as an adjective for anything, such as a beautiful tree or a lovely smelling rose. They are neuter by themselves because they're qualities of God that can be assigned to either male or female, to an individual or an object. As it is stated by Mary Baker Eddy and affirmed by Frederick L. Rawson, it is very important to start off with a flat denial of there being any reality in what the claim is. So if we're working with the claim of matter, such as we were born as a material person, and the result of matter plus matter getting together and combining into a third piece of matter, we must deny that as our heritage. Our heritage is spirit. As Genesis 1 states, it says, "Let man be made in God's image and likeness." And then it says, "God made man in his image and after his likeness." And at the end of the days of creation, it says, "And everything that God made was very good." In the glossary, good is defined as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. So the only action there can be is good action. The only power there can be is good power. The only intelligence, wisdom, and knowing, which are part of omniscience, is good intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. And the only mind is good, perfect. As Shakespeare stated, we have our choice. Are we going to be thinking good or evil? Because our experience is going to reflect our thoughts. We can fill our consciousness with garbage, or we can fill it with the truth about God and God's idea, which is you and me, man. And man is included, as stated before, all female, all male, and all neuter. Those are the three genders. There is no other gender. The next thing I'm going to do is to cite the scientific statement of being, because that is a focus on the unreality of matter and the reality of its opposite, which is spirit as well as mind. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and an infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material, he is spiritual. Now, what does it mean that matter is temporal? Well, we're talking about our thought. It could temporarily be in our thought, but we have the opportunity to realize that it is nothing and we can root it out. Therefore, we see the nothingness of it, and it no longer would be existing in our thought. Matter, by the way, is an object of mortal mind. And it is very amusing because mortal mind assigns its object the name of matter, and matter then tries to dictate the mortal mind. Mortal mind, we could say, is a belief of brain controlling our body, or brain controlling our thoughts, and therefore controlling our experience. But we can turn that all around by making sure that our thoughts are about reality, about facts, about God, and God's manifestation. And God's manifestation is really a part of God, because God could not be a God unless God had a manifestation of which it was the God of. This scientific statement of being is a very powerful statement because it is very straight and to the point. If we had a problem, we could replace the word matter with the name of the problem. For example, let's suppose we were under the belief of an accident that broke our arm, or our leg, or anything else, a finger. We could say there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in whatever we did. In a broken finger, or broken arm, broken leg, whatever. A headache, anything that seems to be the problem. Sleepiness, if we're sleepy, and we don't feel that we've accomplished what we want to accomplish for the day. It can be anything at all. It could be war. There's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in war. Everything is harmonious. Therefore, there cannot be two warring ideas of God. And the only thing that is real are ideas of God, which are reflections of God Himself. So, there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in chaos. Named war. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. The belief of chaos and war is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. The belief of chaos or war is unreal and temporal. Spirit is God. And God's universe is a reflection of God. Therefore, God's universe is harmonious and balanced. There is no war. If everybody in the universe, or even planet Earth, would make that kind of a declaration several times a day, the war would dissipate and never come back. It would be healed. We would have healed the belief of war for planet Earth for all time. Very powerful statement. It's a scientific statement of truth. It's labeled the scientific statement of being. What are we? Our being is what we are. The events are our being projected from thought. And we can make it whatever we want to make it because we have control over our thoughts. Why do we have control over our thoughts? Because God is mind, and mind is the only controller. Mind is the only power, the only action. Mind is all capacity, all capability, all functionality. Mind is all creative force. And put those all together and we have performance. And if you measure performance, it is then measured as power. And the degree to which we yield personal sense for the real will of God. That's the degree to which we can reflect the infinitude of God. There's no limit to God because God is infinite. There is a limit to the belief of matter, or the belief of mortal mind, or the belief of brain controlling us. No, brain does not control us. Our belief that brain controls us is the only thing that gives power to a brain. Communication is not from nerves. That is only our belief of what the communication source is. The real communication is from God, because God is the only action. God is the only talker. God is the only mind. God is the only substance. God is the only identity. Soul is spiritual sense. So our seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, if we yield to spirit as our substance, are spiritual senses. This is what Mary Baker Eddy says about our spiritual senses. 1. Sight, spiritual discernment. That means we can tell the difference between one thing from another. That means we can tell the difference between truth and error. We can tell the difference between real and unreal. Hearing, spiritual understanding. Understanding means that we are hearing the truth and we are yielding to the truth. Therefore, we understand the facts of what we are seeing. Feeling, divine consciousness. We are conscious of everything that is real, and we must claim that. God is our consciousness. Therefore, we are conscious of everything that is true, and we are conscious that anything that is unlike truth is unreal and has no power over us or anyone else. It cannot create a war. It cannot create chaos. It cannot create an accident. It cannot create a sin, sickness, disease, or death. It has absolutely no power to create anything, because God is the only cause and the only creator. Mind is the only thing with a creative ability. And mind does not make mistakes, because it is all-knowing. It is all-seeing. It is all-acting. It is all-wise. And it is all loving. Certainly, love would not create chaos. It wouldn't create injury, would not create accident. It would not create a storm, an earthquake, a flood. It wouldn't create hardship on anyone, because it is all good. Remember the golden rule: do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Do you think God would do something to us that doesn't reflect God's qualities? God doesn't know anything about qualities except his own qualities. And they are all perfect and good. Just as I read the definition to you, or recited it from the glossary of what good is, G-O-O-D. It was God's spirit. Omnipotence, omniscient, omnipresence, and omniaction. The next spiritual sense is smell, and that is intuition of character. You may have been involved in making a decision on something, and you couldn't quite figure out what was wrong and why you didn't want to do something, but you might say, it doesn't smell right. In other words, it is like a sixth sense, intuition. You know there's something wrong, but you can't quite put your finger on it. So you're going to decline, and you're not going to do it. There's something in there that is anti-God. It is anti-wholesome. It is anti-spiritual, anti-American, anti-your brothers and sisters. It is bad. You don't know what it is, but you know there's something wrong, and you don't do it. A get-rich-quick scheme is an example. Greed is one of the biggest fallacies of human thinking. Greed, sex, anything to do with money, anything to do with low morals. That's exactly a soft spot and a low tolerance. And therefore, we want to be doubly aware when we are confronted with a suggestion of any of those kinds of things. President Trump wrote the book, The Art of the Deal. And of course, as you know, if you know anything about him, he established a premier business worldwide. Many, many countries. He has the classiest hotels and classiest golf course and the classiest shopping areas in his hotels that money can buy. It's the best. And he is judged as it is, they are judged as the best by the people that use the service, because they solicit them in order to give awards to the people that have the most premium facilities that they offer to the public. And time again, he is absolutely number one. That's because he cares about serving the people and giving them the finest that there is. So, do we want to utilize the benefits of the Golden Rule and do unto others as we would have them do unto us? Sam Walton was the same way. When he was running his stores, he would let anyone take anything back for any reason, any time, under any circumstances. No questions asked, unless he wanted to just ask you what the reason was. But they would never challenge it. They would give you your choice. You could have money, or you could go and have a store credit, and if you want to do more shopping today, you can use it right now. But it was to please the people. He wanted them to be happy. One of the smartest, most intelligent, successful Christian Science practitioners is Frederick L. Rawson. And this is 115 years ago, or 100 years ago. It was around 1900 to around 1925 is when he was active before he passed on. He said, our reason for being on this earth is to make other people happy. Are we doing that? Are we a giver or a taker? Sadly, most everyone is a taker. How often do you go to our website? Many people tell us that they go there every day. Some people say that as soon as they get up in the morning, they go and see if we have anything new. And we have something new every day, except on the weekends. And usually we don't have people working overtime on the weekends. But Monday through Friday, we have something every single day. Sometimes we have entire presentations on the home page. Usually we have a brand new home page with a brand new topic every single day. As a matter of fact, we have a button, a big banner in the header, which is on every page, that says Daily Topics. And if you click on it, it will show you every single day we have a complete new presentation on the website, the home page. And if you click on Daily Thoughts, you will see that we have a short thought, usually a paragraph or something like that, that gives you something you could listen to and cling to all day long. They're easy to memorize, or you can just have it on your cell phone or have it on a piece of paper. We give, give, give. How about you? How often do you make a donation to the website? Most people never do. Never do. A few people will give maybe $50 a year, or $100 or $150 a year. That's it. But they will go there every day. They'll spend maybe an hour on the website. and what's it worth to them. If they give $100 a year, what's that, about a penny a day or something, 2 or 3 cents? So they spend an hour getting all new inspiration, and they donate, you know, 2 or 3, 5 cents a day. It's up to you. The Bible says tithe. That means give 10%, a tenth part. And what do you tithe? What do you have? What are your assets? Well, everyone has 1,444 minutes. Do you give 10% of that? Do you give 144 minutes, which is 2 hours and 24 minutes, for your own spiritual growth? Do you devote any of your minutes a day to helping others learn? You probably have talents. You probably had a profession. You probably know something that other people could benefit from. Do you use it? Do you teach it? If you walk along the street and you see a homeless person, what do? Most people ignore them. Or you might toss them 5 cents. What good is that? What do they charge? Not that I'm recommending coffee. I think they charge $1 or $2 for a cup of coffee these days. And what do you give? A nickel? Have you ever thought about taking them into a fast food restaurant and giving them all they wanted to eat? That way you know that what you're giving them is going to be useful to them, instead of giving them money that they might spend on drugs or alcohol or tobacco. Do you ask them why they're on the street? Do you take an interest in them? Do you try to figure out what is wrong so maybe there's a way you can give them a hand up or a leg up? You should. You know what the golden rule is? Are you using it? Suppose that the tables were turned and you were on the street. What would you appreciate? Maybe you're on the street of no reason of your own. Who knows? Maybe you were burned out of your house. Maybe you're the only survivor. You had a family and everybody was killed, but you're surviving. But you had no money. And you couldn't get a job. And you're on the street, living out of a cardboard box, or maybe sleeping on a park bench, and just walking around or sitting all day long, not knowing what you can do to, you know, get back to where you should be. Put yourself in the other person's shoes. What would you want to receive? Would you want someone to teach you how to fish instead of giving you a fish so you could be independent? There's a movie called Pay It Forward. And in there, there's a guy that had a new car, and it was totally wrecked. And he didn't have any money to do anything. Somebody came along and gave him the keys to a brand new car. Pay It Forward. I highly recommend that everyone watch that. Remind themselves to be a giver instead of a taker. I'm going to read something to you about giving and taking. Here it is. Giving, you can take it with you. Remember that when you leave this earth, you can take nothing that you have received, but only what you have given. A full heart, enriched by honest service, love, sacrifice, courage. What have you given? Forget what you've received. You could be the wealthiest guy in the world. You might have worked hard to get it. Maybe there was nothing inherited. You may have grown up in the slums, living in a mobile home, or living on the street. It is what you have given that stays with you forever. Why? because what you give multiplies what you have. You don't lose anything because you are giving, which is multiplying. You're not taking from yourself. You are giving of your heart, of your character, your love, your sacrifice, courage, whatever it is. Is it better to be a giver or a taker? You make the decision. It is your salvation you are working out. I can't do it for you. No one else can do it for you. Mary Baker Eddy Institute can't do it for you. God can't do it for you. Christ Jesus can't do it for you. Paul can't do it for you. Mary Baker Eddy can't do it for you. Frederick L. Rawson can't do it for you. Bliss Knapp can't do it for you. No one can do it for you. You have to work out your own salvation. You have to give up your own self-will so that you have room for the will of God to be in your consciousness so that it can guide you every step of the way. If we're going to let matter be our guide, then nothing will matter to us, because we're going to let something that has no life, truth, intelligence, or substance to it. You might need a house, but you don't need money. You can't eat the money. I suppose you could sleep on it. Probably wouldn't be very comfortable. It doesn't shelter you. It is a medium of exchange. That's all it is. But you need the quality. First of all, you have to get in your own thought the fact that you do not exist on a medium of exchange. You want what you can exchange it for. So therefore, you need to be thinking about what is the source of your house, your car, transportation, a job, a raincoat, an umbrella, bathing suit, whatever it is you need. What is the source of that? Did any of those things come from an idea? You think the greatest car or the greatest house in the world could happen if there were no ideas involved? You think they just happen? Somebody wakes up in the morning and it's already created? It happens from hard work. It happens from listening to ideas. It happens from educating yourself on the principle of what you are doing and practicing it over and over again. Ashkenazi, one of the greatest pianists of all time, was asked, "How can you play so perfectly?" He said, I practice until the music plays me. Are we letting God play us? Or are we too busy with our own little priorities? Are we too busy giving 5 cents or 10 cents to somebody on the street, so that we don't have time to ask them what the problem is and how did they get in this position and what can I do to help? What do you need? You probably don't need money. You probably need what money will buy. Well, what is that? You need food, shelter, clothing? You need someone to believe in you? Do you want an opportunity to earn so that you can be independent? I was coming out of a store one time about 6 months ago, department store, and just as I was approaching my vehicle He asked me for money. And he was dressed fine. He was, you know, looked like he was clean. I said, well, why do you need money? He said, I lost my job and I wasn't smart enough to have any kind of a savings in case I was without work. And I haven't eaten since yesterday. I just like to get enough so I can get something to eat. I said, well, what do you do? He said, I'm a handyman. I can fix anything. Electrical, plumbing, carpentry, you name it, and I can do it. I've done it all my life. He said, I don't even have money for my, he drove a two-wheel motorcycle. He said, I don't even have money to put gas in there to go and try to find a job somewhere. Well, I happen to have had a list of a lot of things I wanted to be done at my house. So I said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you an opportunity to dig yourself out of this hole. But you're going to have to be honest with me, and you're going to have to be able to do what you said you could do, fix anything. So I followed him home. He had to walk to the store. So he walked home and I followed him in my vehicle. We took it to the nearest gas station, put gas in it, took him up to my house, explained the first two or three things I wanted done. He said, no problem. And it was late that day. So I arranged for him to come back the next day, first thing in the morning. He worked for me for 3 months. 3 months. He got everything done on the list. It's 3 months of work. I had a long list. Some things took a few minutes. Some things took a couple days or more. He put in electrical things for me, electrical lights. Had a couple of rooms that didn't have proper overhead lighting. Yeah, he went and bought all the stuff and materials and installed it. He did good work. Had a microwave that stopped working. He found the electrical problem and fixed it. I think it cost me $5. I couldn't even ship it to the manufacturer for probably less than $50 because I took the time to ask him. What was the problem? Why does he want money? Are we willing to just do one little thing like that? Are we a giver or are we a taker? If you are studying really earnestly and not getting anywhere, look in the mirror. Are you a giver or are you a taker? Because without giving, you're probably not going to be able to get anything, including a healing. Because you're not loving your neighbor as yourself. The Pharisees asked Jesus, they said, good Lord and Master, what is the greatest commandment of all? Here it is, probably the most worthy man in the world that ever walked on earth. In fact, that's exactly what Mary Baker Eddy said. He was the best man that ever trod the globe. And what did he say to the Pharisees? Why call me good? There is only one good, and that is God. So number one, he's telling them he's not God. Number two, he's telling them he's not even good. What he's really telling them is that anything you see that is good in me is a reflection of God. Because I try to live the way God wants me to live. And then he told him the first commandment. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. These are the two great commandments. Follow them and you'll have all your problems solved. Pretty simple. In fact, I would say you could follow one of them. And that's the golden rule. Because if you're going to do unto others as you would like to have others do unto you, you are automatically thinking about them as being a child of God. Perfect. You having the same mother and father. In fact, Mary Beck Reddy interprets the Lord's Prayer when it said, "Our Father which art in heaven." She says that that means our Father, Mother God. All harmonious. Are we thinking of God as being our mother? Are we thinking of God as telling us how to nurture the qualities? We can't love unless we're nurturing all the other qualities of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth. If we're not nurturing those qualities, we're not following God. And we cannot love. Because love is nurturing all of those qualities. We have to be using the intelligence of mind with every decision we make. We have to be using a spiritual viewpoint when we're involved with limitation. Because limitation means we're thinking on a material level. We're always going to have limitation if we think about matter as being a part of the situation, because the only real substance is spirit. If we're thinking spirit, we're not going to be able to think in a limited way, because spirit is infinite. It is omnipresent. Spirit couldn't be a man and be omnipresent. Are we seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling with the spiritual senses as was described to you earlier in this recording? How about life? Are we living the qualities of God? Are we living in an intelligent way, in a giving way, in a wise way? Are we living the golden rule? How about truth? Are we sticking to the path that leads to God? Are we on the path that is God, being active in our lives? How about our consciousness, our motive? Are they pure? Because that's part of truth, that's part of motive, that's part of consciousness. Truth is consciousness. Truth is motive. How are we thinking? Are we following Shakespeare's advice? Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. What kind of thinking are we putting in our consciousness? Are we resentful about someone? Are we trying to get revenge on them? Do we have enemies? Mary Baker Eddy has an article called "Love Your Enemies" in Miscellaneous Writings on page 8. And she says, "Who is thine enemy? Except someone you're thinking about as your enemy." So it's very easy to love your enemy. Quit thinking about someone as being your enemy. If you remove the hate, you got the love facing you right there. No problem. When you get rid of the hate, no problem to love. If you're going to hang on to the hate, it's impossible. You cannot get rid of the hate unless you make an effort to do it. You can't love unless you get rid of the hate. If you're hating someone, who do you think that hurts? Look in the mirror. Point your finger. And you got the thumb pointing right back at you. That's who you're hurting. Richard Nixon. He had every reason in the book to hate. He was an innocent man. He resigned from presidency of the United States because people that worked for him did things that they shouldn't have done, and he took the responsibility for them. He wasn't the one that did something bad. He took the responsibility for him. So he resigned. He did make one mistake. He was covering it up. He didn't think it was that big a deal, but it was. It was dishonest what they did. They broke into an office to find out what the other people were doing that were trying to get elected president. Big mistake. They were dishonest. They forgot the golden rule. They forgot the golden rule. Or ignored it. Maybe they didn't forget it, but they certainly didn't live it. Are we a giver or a taker? You see how much of our life depends on that one question? Whether or not we believe in matter is based on whether we are a giver or a taker. If we're a taker, we are believing in matter. We're afraid we're not going to have enough. So we're going to take. We think if we give something away that we're going to take something away from ourselves. We think we're going to have to give up something that we want. Well, if we want matter, the best thing we can do is give it up. The wealthiest guy in the world, Elon Musk, he made a posting on X, you know, the social media company that he owns. And he asked everybody, how important is money to you? How important is it to me? He said, on a scale of 1 to 100, what is it? He ranked it as a 1 or a 2, 1 being the lowest. So out of 100, he ranks it right down at the bottom. And I already told you what President Trump, how he ranked it. He said, if I thought about money, the deal would not be successful. He said, you have to think about ideas. He also wrote a book on how to negotiate. You know how you negotiate? By the golden rule. What does the other guy need to be happy? That's how he makes the deal. He stops wars by asking what other people need. What is it you're looking for? Now, of course, sometimes he's dealing with corrupt people, probably all the time. So he has to go according to principle. If somebody's a thief and they said, well, I want what that guy has, then that's not any deal. You can't make a deal with the devil. We have such an opportunity to be reflecting the qualities of God. Up until Mary Baker Eddy arrived on the scene, nobody had even defined what God is. Jesus defined it by living it, but he never said the words. Paul never said the words. None of the people in the Old Testament ever said the words either. They may have expressed it, but they didn't say the words. They couldn't define it. Physicists have devoted their life to trying to figure out what makes the world work. What put the stars up there? Why is it that they're not all crashing into each other all the time? Mary Baker Eddy, almost a totally uneducated woman, because she was so frail that she could never hardly go to school. She had to learn from home. She basically taught herself. And they say that she had the second best vocabulary of anyone, second only to Noah Webster, who was famous for his 1828 dictionary, the greatest dictionary ever published. Whether we are a giver or a taker is really the key point on whether we are a child of God or a child of the devil. If we're a taker, we're certainly not a child of the God. So what does that make us? Look in the mirror. Define yourself. Point that finger to the person in the mirror that you see. Define yourself. What did I do today to help somebody else? What did I do today to make someone else happy? Did I swallow my pride? Did I wash somebody's feet that were dirty and smelly and dry them with the hairs of my head, if you have long hair? What did you do to help someone else that was in need? The greatest feeling, and I know because I've done it, and you probably have too, the greatest feeling is in the world is when you can give something to someone in need and they don't know who you are. In other words, anonymous. They can thank you, but they don't know who you are. So there's nothing for your ego to say, oh, well, I got one more person there that knows my name. It's like having your name on a building at a university or a library. Andrew Carnegie, when he sold U.S. Steel, he was wealthy. He apparently was the wealthiest man in the world, or one of them. He spent the rest of his life giving his money away. He went on all over the UK, all over the US, but every single thing he did, he put his name on it. Carnegie Library, Carnegie Medical Center, Carnegie, you know, financial classes or whatever. Building on a university or a hospital or library. Yeah, I've seen them, particularly in the East Coast area. Carnegie Library, yeah, I've seen them. Yep. He wanted to be recognized. Now, he did a good thing. He did good by giving the money away to build the buildings. He probably built them himself and then gave it to the city or the county or the state. But he had his name on there. You get a much better feeling if no one has any way to repay you. No favors. If they don't have any way to repay you, other than maybe a polite thank you, and even that, is that what you're looking for? Jesus healed 10 lepers, and one of them gave thanks. One. A disease that supposedly couldn't be healed. One out of 10 recognized that the truth is what healed him, and he was blessed, and he expressed his gratitude. How about the children of Israel? Did they all give thanks when they went across the Red Sea that had been parted? If that really happened, I don't know whether it happened or not. I wasn't there. But the idea that they were able to not yield to a material belief of obstruction, that is the key. Because they established that in their heart that they could go through the problem and get to the other side. Are we a giver or a taker? That is such a key thing in our success in our own life. I am very grateful for the ideas that have come to me while I was recording this. Everything, all these recordings are extemporaneous. There's no preparation made. Whatever thoughts come, that's what you hear. Very little of it is from me. I might get an idea of a topic. And often it's not until I'm done with it that I use the name that I thought I was going to use, because the flow may go in a different direction than what originally came to me as a topic that was in need of having a prayer treatment. I'm grateful for all of the characters in the Old Testament from which I've quoted and thoughts came to me for healing purposes. And in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, Habakkuk is very important to me. It says, God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. And in the New Testament, Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. Now, we can look at that as being connected to divine love meets every human need. I like to look at it as the spiritual qualities that represent God are fulfilled better in our life. We get a little bit better understanding. That's what it means to me. If we seek God first, we are uplifted with a little bit better understanding of something, a new tidbit that was added in our study session, and we're grateful for it. Mary Baker Eddy, if we're not grateful for Mary Baker Eddy, boy, we're foolish. The board of directors took her picture out of the book as soon as she passed on. They were all men. They didn't like the idea that they had to follow the directions of a woman, because back in those days, a woman couldn't vote. A woman couldn't hold property in her own name. Yet she was probably one of the biggest property owners in all of Boston. She owned prime property and a lot of acreage, where she had this large publishing society and biggest church in town and the property all around it. She didn't lack anything. Very grateful for her bringing the healing element back to Christianity. It had been lost ever since 325 AD when they had the meeting of the Council of Nicaea, where the government and the two or three biggest churches got together and they decided who was going to be God. And they said, well, Jesus is. We're going to make Him God. Well, I already told you what Jesus said. Jesus said, why call me good? There's none good but God. Jesus was the one that washed His disciples' feet, just like Mary Magdalene washed His feet. Humility is the key. If we're not going to be humble, we're not going to get the blessings from humility. Look at the blessings that Jesus had. He overcame His own physical death. He overcame the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter, and therefore ascended. And then He came back and met with John on the island of Patmos to dictate the book of Revelation. Mary Baker Eddy did something similar, except she didn't dictate a book, but when she left, she came back a few minutes later and was seen in the house by two or three of her top people. She said, look at those people. They're looking at what they think is me. I'm here. I'm not there, lying lifeless. In fact, she left a note that said, God is my light, by her bedside. Before she passed on, she wrote it. God is my light. She wanted to go over on the West Coast in California. Back in those days, there was no train that went there. She transported herself there, stayed for 2 weeks, and then came back to Pleasant View in Concord, New Hampshire. She had control over her body. She could have escaped death, but she didn't feel like the people would accept it. The people were not ready. Well, the people were apparently not ready enough for Jesus, because not only half a dozen people came to His crucifixion. And all the ones that didn't show up, the other 11 disciples, they all came to a violent death. Yep. They were traitors. Only John hung in there. And he was the only one, therefore, worthy to receive the dictation of the book of Revelation from Jesus Himself on the island of Patmos. It's all in the Bible. Robert C. Putnam, probably the second greatest Bible scholar next to Mary Baker Eddy, in his 10 Bible Lessons, 169-page book, which is basically an index and a summary of the key people and the key thoughts in the Bible. And to prepare even to read one of his pages, it might take you several hours to read the preparation, which are other Bible quotations, books of the Bible that you need to read to get the background on why he is giving the summary of it. Wonderful book. Wonderful book. I tried for years to get the right kind of Bible resources. There is no one that can dilute, deflect, obstruct, interfere with in any way the truth that has been stated in this recording. Because the truth is always true. Always true. And if we will just listen to what the first quote in the beginning of Science and Health is telling us, and let that be our guide whenever we study, wow, we would never have the threat of war again, or the threat of dark ages, or anything like that. If you want to learn how to heal everything there is to heal, at the top of every single page, we have a rectangular box up there that says, heal everything. And if you click on that, it will tell you exactly how to do it. And we've got 101 pages that are the last 101 pages in the textbook of Christian Science that proves that that works. What did Einstein say about Christian Science? He said, religion without science is blind. Science without religion is lame. Well, what is Christian Science? It is both science and religion. The only religion in the book that is based on science. What else did he say about Mary Baker Eddy and the textbook? He said, blessed art thou. And this is all on our home page. In fact, it's on every page, it's up in the header with a picture of Einstein. So he said, blessed art thou, for everything that is in this book. And thou is with a capital T. He's giving so much reverence to Mary Baker Eddy for what she did, he is calling her thou with a capital T. Basically saying she's God. Obviously, she's the last one in the book that would agree to that, because she was a servant of God. The book was dictated to her by God. She says, I was a scribe unto orders, or under orders. I was a scribe under orders. It would come and she would write as fast as she could as the ideas came. She was a scribe under orders. No one can interfere with the truth that's in this recording. I will close by reading the definition of God and from both page 465 and page 587. God, incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence, and the definition of good, God, Spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. There is no action except the action of God. God is love, and that protects everyone in existence. Amen.